Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
You're listening to Blue Jays Nation Radio
with Cam Lewis and Tyler Yaremchuk,
a member of the Nation Network of Podcasts and delivered by DoorDash.
Welcome into episode 93 of Blue Jays Nation Radio, in which we are going to try and not jump off a cliff after the Blue Jays lost 2 of 3 games in Oakland to the Oakland Athletics, who are the worst team in baseball. Tyler Yaremchuk's at the NHL draft, so I, Cam Lewis, am hosting, and I've got BK here. He is going to help us feel better about what just happened. Brendan, how's it going?
We're riding a one-game winning streak into the Seattle series is how I'm choosing to look at this. So, yeah, things are great. We got a win streak going, and off to Seattle with nothing but hope and belief in this team.
Yeah, that's exactly where we're at. Thank goodness they did win the finale, though, because they lose the first two games. We're all sitting here before this being like, okay, here's the easy part of the schedule. Oakland, 3 automatic wins. Maybe they win one. None of us thought that the Oakland A's were going to come in and host the Jays, I guess, and win 2 of 3. But here we are. It does kind of feel like, even though earlier this season, the Jays did a 4-game sweep in Anaheim, it does always feel whenever they go to the West Coast, it's cursed. It's especially with Seattle, I find it always feels like there's a ton of momentum riding into the Seattle series. You know, there's a million Jays fans going down and they hit a wall. So I think maybe this time it'll be different because they got their demons out of the way in Oakland and now they're rolling into the Seattle series with zero momentum whatsoever.
Yeah, I think one factor that probably isn't being talked enough right now, and you know what, I know a lot of fans don't like the excuses or whatever, but that, look, in 162 game season spread out over what they're doing it in 178 days this year, there's going to be lulls. And, you know, obviously they've played in some hot weather. They've done a lot of travel. This team's playing 18 games in 17 days. That is a lot of baseball. And as much as people like to, you know, pretend it's not hard on your body, it is hard on your body to do that every single day. And it's not just the game, right? These guys have a lengthy warm-up. They're hitting in the cage. They're doing fielding drills. It is a lot to take at this point of the year where your body's already beat up and they're just playing a ton. So obviously the Jays are mixing in rest days, which is another thing people love to have problem with. But yeah, it's been a grind. They're kind of in that dog days phase. And I'm hoping a series in Seattle that can hopefully provide a little bit of an emotional boost to the team just because of the environment, ride that into an off day. You're kind of getting a lot closer to the All-Star break where a lot of the team will get a breather and to take a step back and just kind of relax the body for the most part. And hopefully all that leads into good things. But yeah, I think the team's just worn out right now. And then if you factor in emotionally what happened last weekend with Mark Budzinski's daughter and obviously that was brutal for the team to deal with. And then immediately they've got to fly across the continent, the West Coast, and play 10 p.m. baseball games with no off days between. Again, while riding that, right? There's a human element to the sport. You know, these guys aren't just, you know, robots that we watch on the TV. They're real people and they deal with emotions and fatigue and all this stuff. So there's a lot going on. With that to say, they shouldn't be losing 5 in a row. That's harmful to the team. It's problematic and it's put them in a, I don't want to say tough spot. It's probably overstated how some people are talking because the standings are okay still. But yeah, it's not what you want. And it's such a funny contrast to last week because Saturday morning we woke up and the Jays had won 4 of 5 against Boston and Tampa. 4 of 5. We are very recently removed from like good vibes. Like things are awesome. This is great. And oh, so quickly it turned, and the Oakland series was a problem. But yeah, hopefully Seattle is a you know, a good moment for the team.
It is pretty funny, like you said, how quickly things can change, though, because it really felt like, wow, you know, they just did well in the Boston series, and then wow, they've won two of these games against Tampa, and they're going to play three more. Things are looking really good. Good starters pitching. And then everything just goes to shit so fast. And when it goes to shit, it seems so many people forget how good things look just a week ago. But, you know, that's baseball for you. It is what it is.
My people Twitter replies are absolutely gong show.
You have?
If I try and share this perspective, and I get that it's annoying. So I understand that, and people just want to like vent, but they're like venting to me. And I'm like, come on, like it's been 5 days of poor baseball. And yes, the team has, and we'll get to this, and the team has underperformed, certainly in some ways this year to our expectations. So there's reason to be frustrated, but it's like people don't know how to balance the extremes. Like you're either a good baseball team or a terrible baseball team, and people have no ability to like slot their mindset into somewhere between those two things. And this is an above average team that we probably would have hoped would have been better than that. But yeah, we can get into it.
I find the team this year, and I mean, we're just kind of rambling now, which is fine. We'll get into three up, three down, which is pretty much just going to be going through the three games in a second. But I find this year's team reminds me a lot of the 2016 team, where the strengths aren't necessarily the strengths you thought they were going to be. And there's all these, you know, all this waiting for the offense to blow up, and, you know, it will for a short period of time, but it's not the 2015 team. I don't think it's really even last year's team at all with the explosive offense. There's just very different strengths, and it might be a little bit more of a grind of a team to watch. It's not as like bang, bang, exciting. It's more when they're doing well, it's quietly. And when they're doing poorly, it's loud. And I think that's kind of what's going on here.
Yeah, you're exactly right about that. And the funny thing is, this team is better offensively than it feels like, and we'll get into some of those numbers in a bit. But yeah, 2016 is a good comp because it was just a year where they made the playoffs. They advanced, you know, to play Cleveland in the ALCS. Like they did well in that series, you know, to get where they got. But man, like that year was just it.
It was exhausting.
Never felt good. Yeah, it was exhausting. Exactly. You just have these games where like today, right? Like this Oakland game, you win 2-1 on some pretty dramatic home runs late in the game. And it's just like an exhale. It's not a celebration. It's an exhale. And 2016 had a lot of just exhale wins. So, yeah.
It feels like in 2016, the longest winning streak, I know this isn't accurate, but it feels like the longest winning streak was when they won the wild card game and then swept the Rangers, and it was a 4-game winning streak. And that was the longest streak they had all year. I know it's not accurate, but it literally feels that way. Anyways, so I forgot to do the ad read at the beginning, but this podcast is brought to you by DoorDash Ding Dong. Use promo code BJNPODDD if you are a first time user of the app, and you'll get 25% off. So go ahead and order yourself something nice. Go ahead and don't bother with the dishes. That's great. So the first thing we're going to talk about is game one, in which Alek Manoah put together a surprisingly bad start. This is not something we ever see from him, and Oakland isn't a team that hits particularly well. So it was kind of stunning to see Manoah goes 5 2/3, allows 4 earned, allows 2 home runs as well. And then Cole Irvin, who's a fine pitcher, but not Oakland's best, not an amazing starter, goes and dominates the Jays for 8 innings. So what did we see in game one? That was a frustrating one. That was one where it really looked like on paper they're going to win this thing, and they just didn't.
Yeah, you got a, you know, a soft-ish tossing lefty. Cole Irvin isn't throwing 87 up there, but he, you know, he's not a flamethrower. He is a decent pitcher, and he's given the Jays fits in the past, or at least I recall one other Coliseum game
last year
it was just miserable. But yeah, I mean, look, he's a decent pitcher, and you know, you would have liked to have seen the Jays hit better. And the biggest takeaway was Manoah, right? Like that was his worst start of the year. It comes against Oakland in the cavernous Coliseum. And he struggled with velocity, which is a concern. I think the fact, as you said, he went pitched into the sixth inning was, I guess, a little bit comforting that, okay, maybe, you know, nothing was necessarily bothering him, where, you know, medical staff, coaching staff is like, we got to pull him because of this. But his velocity on basically all pitches was down, you know, 2-ish miles an hour, which isn't what you want. And velocity matters. And you saw him get beat up. And I don't know if we can point specifically to velocity as the reason why, but it certainly didn't help. And it was a tough game for him for sure.
Yeah, it's something we're definitely going to have our eye on. And then in game two, I think the reason that the Manoah start was so disappointing is because you have Yusei Kikuchi going right after. And after he puts together a good start against Tampa last week, everyone's like, oh, maybe he's turned a corner. But no, he goes back to being the Yusei Kikuchi that cannot throw a strike. He only goes 2 1/3 innings, allows 4 runs, but walks 5 guys. It was just one of those Yusei Kikuchi starts where it seems like he has no clue where the strike zone is. So now we're kind of back to the discussion, which is, are they going to throw this guy in the bullpen? Like when they originally got Robbie Ray, that's where he started. And it seemed like that's where he learned how to command and throw strikes. Might that be something we see, or is the starting depth too bad to do that now?
Yeah, the timing's tough with Gausman being hurt, right? So the best case scenario for the Jays is they start Casey Lawrence Thursday, which looks like the plan. And Gausman is good to go on Sunday because then he can take Kikuchi's spot in the rotation. There's an off day after that. So basically they can just skip him for one time in the rotation and let him work on stuff on the side. I believe he's able to be sent down with his permission. So you still need that. Obviously, you know, I can't imagine he's having any fun pitching right now in the major leagues. His money's coming regardless. But he doesn't exactly strike me as a guy who's mailing it in. He strikes me as a guy who's lost.
He looks like he's trying.
He's lost.
Of course. Yeah. He's not just going out there and phoning it in. No.
Exactly. So he's lost right now. And the best thing for him to do would probably be to be throwing 90 to 100 pitches in Buffalo with some direction from the coaching staff on, you know, what to be working on and this and that. And I don't know if they'll go that route. And I don't know if he would accept that route. But that feels like the best solution. But at the same time, that means you're giving a rotation spot to, you know, Max Seal or Casey Lawrence, which isn't great either. And another theme I've seen on Twitter a lot is, you know, they have to make a trade now, or they must make a trade by Friday. Like, it's not how trades work. The other team has to give you something. They have
you don't have any leverage.
No leverage. And I don't necessarily think they're that concerned about leverage as much as just the trade market isn't moving. So you can't force it to move unless you wildly overpay. And that doesn't make sense to do either. Like, the team as constructed still needs to show the front office a little bit more than they've shown. It works in tandem. The front office needs to supplement the talent, but the team needs to play to its talent as well. And there's a lot to figure out there. But Kikuchi, obviously, it's really funny to think back to May. He was really good in May, like really one of the better starters in the AL in May. And the walks were still up a little bit, but he was untouched. He was still in the zone enough, and opponents were not hitting him. They couldn't touch him. It's hilarious to think that that was the case like 5 weeks ago. 5 weeks ago, we were doing the whole Pete Walker, Robbie Ray. Oh my goodness, we've fixed him. We've created another monster, and it's gone so poorly. And people in Seattle would tell you this is the Kikuchi experience to a T. But there's a lot to be concerned about. They've got a lot invested in him, and they need to figure it out.
Yeah, they do. And another pitcher who had been struggling, Jose Berríos, comes. I wouldn't say struggling. It's just been kind of an up and down, as it has been all year. It's been a really weird year for Jose Berríos. But in Oakland, when they needed him to put together a good start, Jose Berríos put together an excellent start. He goes 6 innings, allows 1 earned run on 4 hits and strikes out 6 guys. Like, they badly needed length, because the last thing you want is to have to use Casey Lawrence or somebody like that in a game in Oakland. And then he kept them in the whole time, and they had their 2 dramatic home runs, one of which was Matt Chapman. It's fun to see him hit a home run in Oakland. That's exciting. And then Bo hits a home run as well. He was saying, they mentioned in the broadcast that he feels like his batting is coming around, which would be nice because it hasn't been a phenomenal season for Bo. But it was a lot of positives in Wednesday's game, save for the lack of hitting. It's not, you know, ideal to watch the Jays go up against kind of a random anonymous player with a +5 ERA and have him throw, you know, 6 innings and allow 1 earned run. But the positive is Berríos here, so we'll focus on that.
Yeah, it was very much needed. One of the stunning numbers coming into this week was Berríos had a worse ERA than Kikuchi coming into this Oakland series for the season. Like, that's unbelievably funny. He had a worse ERA than Kikuchi. He had the kind of outing he needed to have. The Jays have done a lot. They've done tinkering with Berríos and Kikuchi, and as much as they've been praised for tinkering in the past, it has not gone well this year. But, you know, he's moved back and forth on where he stands in the rubber. There's a lot of elements with Berríos and the break he's getting on his curveball that goes a long way to whether it's going to be effective or not. So I think he's just battling some mechanical stuff, and it's hard to be thinking on the mound, right? You want to just have your mechanics ingrained into your body and just be one fluid thing. And clearly he's been fighting it for this entire season because he's been so hit or miss. Like Berríos has had great starts and a number of them, like a number of really, really good starts. And he's had a number of terrible starts, like almost Kikuchi level bad.
There's little middle ground. It's almost one or the other.
There's very little. And his batted ball data against is not good, right? He has been hit hard. He's been hit off and all that stuff. But again, like there's just game to game variance on, you know, the horizontal movement of his curveball and whether he's able to get on top of it and actually throw it for a strike. And you just, you know, it's been really inconsistent, but again, a fantastic outing. I know he wasn't facing a good offense, but Berríos looked good. The Jays only scored two runs. Yes, they probably deserved more. They had some really loud contact in the game, some warning track shots. Lourdes had that like opposite field screamer that, a diving stop at second base ends the inning, whereas that would have scored runs. So the offense, you know, hit better than the two runs they scored. And one thing that I've kind of come around on in watching baseball is if there's a pitcher who has good stuff, I just don't care about his ERA, because his ERA might be a signifier of how well he is able to, or how frequently he can harness his stuff. And some pitchers just struggle with that. They've got loud stuff, great stuff, big velocity. They're able to, you know, a nice curveball, whatever, but then they're just really inconsistent with it all. And some days those pitchers put it together. Caprillion seemed pretty good today. Like I wasn't watching him pitch and thinking this is a horrific pitcher.
He was a first round pick.
He was amazing. Yeah. Like he's got decent stuff. So he's got decent stuff and he was pitching better than some other games he has this year. The Jays had some poor batted ball luck and it resulted in two runs, but I don't think the offense was honestly that big of an issue today. Thankfully they were able to get those two home runs to make something of it. But in general, yeah, they're on kind of a little five, six game slump offensively. And hopefully they can turn around going into Seattle, who unfortunately are pitching lights out lately.
Yeah, that's the unfortunate thing is, so all told now after that win, the Jays are 45-38 on the season, which is solid, I guess. Based on the way people are talking about it, you'd think they were like 3 or 4 games under 500. They were 500, but it's not the end of the world. It's not. I think kind of the doom and gloom is a little bit more overplayed this year because the expectations were so high, coupled with the fact the Yankees are on pace to win about 145 games. But yep, this time last year, they were 43-40. Things were worse. Yeah, it's fine.
They had the hardest strength of schedule too to date, right? So they have that record. They're 7 games above 500 with the toughest schedule against. Now that's not super helpful when you go in and lose 2 or 3 to Oakland when you're getting some of those schedule offsets in your favor. But it's been the hardest schedule to date, and Blue Jays have the 20th hardest schedule remaining. So it does lighten up. The Jays did kind of get put through the gauntlet to start the year, not as bad moving forward. But yeah, at the same time, I mean, you know, the run differential isn't amazing. The Jays record probably is an accurate indicator of how they've played, if not slightly, you know, maybe a couple games ahead of how they've played talent wise. So yeah, it's not the same as last year, but also they're not in a worse spot than they were last year at an extra playoff spot. And again, they're just not in as bad shape as it feels like right now.
So speaking of that, let's take a look back at kind of how things have gone in the first half and hand out some letter grades like we're doing report cards. So the place I want to start, because we've kind of already harped on it a whole bunch, is the starting pitching. We've already talked about Alek Manoah has been fantastic. Jose Berríos has been all over the grid. Yusei Kikuchi, all over the grid, more so negative. Kevin Gausman's been good, but some struggles there too. And then Hyunjin Ryu's injured and out for the year. Ross Stripling's filled in. He's been fine, but there's virtually zero starting pitching depth after that. The starting pitching was really supposed to be the strength of the team this year. And for a while there, it looked like it was going to be 2016 level. And that's why I think I kind of made that comparison earlier, is that it does feel like it has been the strength and it should be. But what do you think about the starting pitching? Like, what letter grade would you give that?
Do you remember my bold prediction from our preseason pod, which was rotation would lead baseball in ERA?
Yeah.
Hasn't exactly played out that way. Nope. yeah, we could have saved three up, three down for the rotation because we've got six guys to discuss and there's three up and three down. You're up are Gossman, Manoa, Stripling, and you're down are Ryu, Brios, and Kikuchi. And I guess a fourth down would be the fact that there's nobody else to fulfill this role that you would feel good about. So yeah, I'm giving the rotation like a C plus. I think that's reasonable because again, Gossman's been really good. Manoa's been a monster. And Stripling's been great in this role, right? Like Stripling's the 3 ERA and he's probably performing above his talent level. He's gotten a few breaks of facing, you know, some not great opponents and that type of thing. But yeah, it's those three guys who have carried a lot of the load as Kikuchi has been a complete wild card besides a complete disaster outside of May. And Brios is just inconsistent and trying to find something. He's fighting it and he's not striking guys out. And all that stuff. So it's an interesting group. You know, if Brios, like, let's say he's turning a corner, let's say he's found something, let's say he can even just be like a number four starter the rest of the way. You feel so much better about where things are. If the other guys can stay healthy, obviously Gossman, you know, when he's hopefully comes back soon from the ankle thing, Manoa, Stripling, Brios, and then, you know, they got to figure out what they do with the number five spot, but those four guys you can feel decent about in your rotation. So it has a chance to be okay, but on the thinnest of margins, right? Another injury, they're hooped. Gossman's ankle doesn't recover properly, they're hooped. They're going to need probably to add somebody just, you know, to cover the Kikuchi problem. And I don't think they need to spend, and the Jays don't have a ton of prospect capital to trade, but they need to go do another like 2020 Taiwan Walker trade or bringing in Robbie Ray at the time. I don't think they'd want somebody as volatile as Robbie Ray was that season, but like they need to just bring in somebody who can be like a number five.
Yeah. Simply Jose to cover Quintana in types,
right?
Like that.
Yeah, exactly. Jose Quintana. And look, you're not going to feel good about Jose Quintana starting a game in Boston or New York, but again, he can give you innings. He's a veteran. And, you know, ideally, he's not a disaster. You wouldn't expect him to be a disaster. And that's kind of what the Jays need, right? They just need to cover innings out of that number five spot of the rotation, assuming they can stay healthy otherwise. And it gives them time to just figure out what's going on with Kikuchi and what to do with him.
Well, maybe what you do is you then take Kikuchi and throw him into the bullpen, which has been quite the enigma. The bullpen was weird this year, and that's what we're going to jump on to next. The bullpen was really, really, really bad last season until they fixed it midway through the year. And then this year it started off really quite well. And it seemed like, wow, this is so different than last year. The April bullpen's dominant. This is getting us so many close wins and we're not playing all too well. And then in May, it kind of seemed like it got gassed and fell off a cliff. I don't think it's been quite as bad recently, June and early July, but it's still been, you know, very up and down. I don't think there's very many games that are close where you feel like, yeah, I'm very cozy with clearing four innings from the Blue Jays bullpen. So what would you give them as a letter grade?
I had a hard time with this because just like my initial reaction is like D, like this is just a failing group and it's been bad. And then when you pull up the, you know, the ERA of the team, like the, of the bullpen and actual performance, like they have five guys with ERAs under 3.5, right? Like that, again, 3.5 is not a great barometer for evaluating a bullpen arm, but you're not a disaster pen arm if you're, you know, under 3.5. And that five would be Meza, Jimmy Garcia, Romano, Simber, and Phelps all have ERAs under 3.5. And with Phelps is a 3 ERA. So they've got this group of five who for the most part have been healthy and you kind of feel okay with them, but you never feel good outside of Romano when he, you know, he looked good.
Even then though, like he has his cold spots too, where
Romano has not been 2021 Romano. Like if you look at his strikeout rate, his walk rate, hard hit, batted ball, like he's not the guy he was last year. So yeah, you're right. I don't feel great confidence in any of these guys coming in. With that being said, again, playing to the extremes, right? Something you just either feel something's great or awful. And it feels like, oh, the pen's awful. And yet here they have five guys who are okay. What the bullpen is missing is strikeouts. That's been talked about ad nauseum. And it lacks depth performance beyond that group. Trent Thornton was actually doing like okay-ish, fulfilling this kind of multi-inning mop-up role or the Kikuchi piggyback kind of thing, or just coming in to put out fires. I think when they called him in yesterday, I believe they said that was a seventh appearance in like nine games.
he got a lot of pitching action in that Tampa series.
Yeah, like yeah. Thornton. So I feel bad for him because he was used a ton and he got sent down today, I think, just because of
what we're probably too hard
to use him for a couple days. Yes, we're probably too hard.
As a fan base, we're way too hard on the guy.
You don't want him in leverage, but he could like fulfill that eighth guy in the bullpen role.
Yeah, he's your backup Ross Stripling, and I think that's fine.
Yeah. But Trevor Richards has been a big disappointment, right? He's a guy, again, you just kind of hoped would have fit into that group of sub 3.5 ERA guys. Not somebody you'd think would be amazing, but you'd hope he could fulfill that spot. But yes, the bullpen does not strike guys out. The funny thing is Trevor Richards actually has the highest K rate per nine of the in the bullpen, but 10.16.
For every strikeout, there's a home run.
And a walk. There's a walk and then a home run. So yeah, it's not great. It's a bummer of a bullpen. I'm giving it a C minus, and even that feels slightly harsh when you just look at the numbers. But you know, you and I, we can go on feel here, and it doesn't feel great. And obviously, that's where they need to add, you know, impact or at least like solid depth, like guys you can put in a leverage situation, and again, just feel at least okay with them in that role. And that's what the team needs. Problem is, every team needs that. And they're all going to be hunting for it at the deadline. Problem is, there's an additional playoff spot now, and there's more teams who think they have a chance, which limits, shrinks the group of sellers. So, yeah, it's not a great trade market to be in for desiring relievers. But again, you just repeat what you did last year, adding Simber and Richards, find those, maybe one of those guys, and then aim a little higher elsewhere, and hopefully you can turn it around. And yeah, I mean, Mazo was lights out last year. Outside of what, like he had, you know, a 3-week stretch that was terrible earlier in the season. Everyone wanted him DFA'd, and then he was phenomenal in the rest of the way there. So I'm hopeful he can kind of return to being that guy where you have a ton of confidence in him, but they obviously need reinforcements there, and we'll see, you know, we'll see what they can pull off. But his K rate has fallen off a bit compared to last year. So I don't really know how to evaluate Meza. I don't have a strong opinion on him other than it's not the same as last year. But again, hopefully he can turn it around and you know, be a legit setup guy, lefty leverage guy for them late in games.
Speaking of things they might need to add, everyone's been talking about them adding a left-handed bat because this is something we kind of saw coming at the beginning of the season, because there was all kinds of talk. Okay, they need to acquire Jose Ramirez from Cleveland because he will diversify their lineup and give them a switch hitter who gets on base, which, you know, they obviously don't really have that type. They're very much so a righty heavy lineup of guys that swing a lot. And as a result, the offense hasn't been anywhere near as good this year as it was last. It doesn't feel as potent. It doesn't feel as threatening. What grade would you give the bats?
So I'm giving the offense a B.
Really?
Yes. And I actually think I would probably grade it higher if it didn't come with expectations of being an elite offense, right? Mm-hmm. So I we're recording this on Wednesday. I tweeted this out a little bit before we started, but I went on to Baseball Savant just to look at the StatCast stuff and to get a feel for how is that offense actually performed, both in expected numbers and production, like real tangible production. And the Blue Jays have the number one hard hit rate in all of baseball, the hard hit percentage, sorry. So they have a hard hit percentage more than any team in baseball.
When they do it, right?
Yeah, exactly. They have the highest expected batting average in baseball. So that factors in strikeouts and all that stuff. Their actual batting average is third. So they're underperforming their expected batting average, but just by a little bit. They're third in baseball. And, you know, everyone looks at this team already heavy sluggers. Their batting average is third best in baseball. They are second in slugging percentage. And again, a big complaint is free swingers. They don't take walks, that type of thing. If you were to guess what their walk rate is, what would you say it is in baseball?
Oh, geez, I would guess they're in the lower half.
15th. They're exactly league average in walk rate. And teams you think of that are super patient hitting, elite hitting teams, Boston is 16th. Blue Jays have a better walk rate than the Boston Red Sox, who I think of in, you know, that patient hitter mold. So yeah, like would you want to see a top 10 walk rate? Sure. But like they have hitters who are swingers, and you can't just make them something they aren't. And by trying to make them something else, you might take away their ability to actually perform when they do swing the bat. So again, it's an incomplete offense, or it has some inefficiencies that we see from time to time. But I think at the same time, expectations are a little too high think people are grading on an unrealistic curve, and they would watch a team struggle for 5-6 days and act like it's the end of the world, when after a stretch of terrible 5-6 days, they're still number one in hard hit percentage, number three in batting average, number one in expected batting average. This team can hit. They hit well. They hit past their inefficiencies that we talked about. They can sometimes be pitched to, and it feels frustrating, but like, the numbers speak for themselves. This offense has been very, very good. By WRC plus, I think they're only behind last season by like 4 points or something like that. They're really comparable to last year.
Really, yeah.
It doesn't feel like it. Yeah.
No.
So sometimes we just got to separate what it feels like versus, you know, what is reality. And it can be streaky. It totally can be streaky, but the offense probably deserves less criticism than it's getting, because the team can really hit, and they've performed. They've done it. They had a weird April, and their numbers were down. Like, none of these numbers existed in April.
Right?
Yeah. Dead ball. Yeah, and they hit in a lot of lineouts, and their runners and scoring position numbers were terrible and all that stuff. But yes, they basically have hit the crap out of the ball since like middle of May, or, you know, the closer to the end of May. They've been by far the best team offensively in baseball. So we should be less hard on the offense. I'm comfortable giving them a B. And yes, if our expectations weren't higher coming into the year, I'd probably be talking B plus, A minus.
And speaking of expectations, on the complete other side of this is, I think the expectations for the defense were, I don't think they were particularly high, to be honest with you. I don't think when you look at the Blue Jays roster, you think this is an elite fielding team. Though, to be fair, over the offseason, they did actively improve that. I mean, Santiago Espinal is playing more of a role. They acquire Matt Chapman. You know, the defense should be better. What grade would you give the defense? Do you feel like this is a strength of the team? Is this a weakness? It's a tough one, because it feels like sometimes they look so bad in the field, and it's stunning how bad they look. But then, you know, they are a better defensive club last year. I feel a lot safer with Matt Chapman at third and more Santiago Espinal.
Yeah, I think it's, again, just confirmation bias, where you like see like struggles occasionally, or see, you know, Teoscar, you know, bobble something in right field, or Bo make a poor throw at short. And it's just, oh, this team can never play defense. But again, the numbers don't necessarily bear that out. They're 12th. They're ranked 12th in outs above average, which to me is the most reliable fielding metric in baseball. None of them are perfect, and they're probably inferior to offensive metrics. But with that being said, it's my favorite one, because it factors in where you're positioned yourself when you start, and how long it takes to get to a ball and all that stuff. But anyways, they're 12th in outs above average at four. Fun fact, the worst team in baseball is the Giants, who were amazing last year. They're negative 33. Negative 33 outs above average. And yeah, the Blue Jays are tied for 12th, and you know, just a few, one behind being a top 10 team, one out above average. So like, they've added Matt Chapman, who obviously has been good at third base. His numbers have not been as good as in past years, but I think you and I would say we feel good about Matt Chapman.
He's also playing on the turf too, so yep, we have to be fair, right?
There's factors there, but yeah, even still, like, projecting Matt Chapman forward, I feel really good about him at third base. Second base, you've got a lot of Santiago Espinal, who's like a gold glove caliber second baseman. And first base, Vladdy, in the past, I've felt like the fan base probably overstated how good of a defensive first baseman he became, just because like he looked capable there. And that was like exciting to people. But he's turned into like the metrics like him. The eye test is pretty strong. Like, Vladdy's a good defensive. Yeah, he's a good defensive first baseman. So, and then Bo is a below average shortstop. Yes, but your other three infield positions are all good at what they do. Alejandro Kirk has blossomed into a really strong defensive catcher. The metrics haven't been as kind to Danny Jansen. I don't think he's a good framer on low pitches, but Danny Jansen, when healthy, you know, solid, you believe in him as a solid defensive catcher. So basically their infield, if you include catcher, is like four solid defensive positions out of five. For the outfield, it's a different story. They're just not as good in the outfield. But again, overall, the defense has been much improved from last year, and I feel fine with the group they have. They've done a good job utilizing Bradley Zimmer, who people don't want on this team. But when you've got 13 players that you're carrying, position players at any given time, you can afford to have a Bradley Zimmer until there's another injury. And that's where you dump him and then maybe go trade for somebody else. But he's fast and he plays a really good center field. And when you're not giving him at bats, he can actually be useful to the team, both in a pinch run role and a late inning defensive replacement role. So the defense is fine. Again, I'm giving it a B. It's an okay group and certainly improved from last year.
Yeah, that's reasonable. And I think that's actually a perfect segue to our final one. You mentioned Zimmer as being a good backup. One thing the Jays are kind of lacking, it seems, and we talked about this as being a strength at the beginning of the year. One thing we said, this won't be the 2013 hype implosion because this team has a lot of depth. And one thing we've seen now that the Blue Jays have struggled with, specifically with pitching, is kind of a lack of depth. So the final thing we're going to do report cards for is the system. And I think this kind of splits into two. There's like the lower levels of the system where you have exciting names, but then there's up there in Buffalo, AAA Buffalo, where they just haven't really been able to churn out too many useful players that come up and contribute like that. It doesn't seem like there's anyone where you're looking down the Bisons and you're like, you know what, this guy can come up and be a game changer right now. So what would you rank the system?
Yeah, I would say overall, there has been some nice breakout performances, but I'm probably giving it like a C or a C plus. And as you said, the upper levels have been a disappointment this year just because they haven't produced anybody who's leapt off the page. Gabby Moreno is in the majors and, you know, we love him as a prospect and he's got a great future as a catcher, but he came into the year with high expectations. He was a top five prospect in a lot of places, yeah. Top 10 everywhere. Outside of him, what have you gotten from the minor leagues, right? You entered the year. Matt Gage. And you know what? A nice story for sure. You're right about that. But you entered the year with rotation of the big five and then Stripling was your six and Pearson was your seven. And you hope that that group could get you through most of the year. Obviously, we've seen, you know, that fall apart spectacularly with Pearson's issues, Ryu getting hurt, and Kikuchi being Kikuchi. So once you get to that 8, 9, 10 spot of rotation depth, I think it's fair to not expect this, but like every year you just hope there's some name who just emerges as like a capable, you know, could make some spot starts and like not implode. And you had guys like Bowden Francis, Thomas Hatch, Anthony Kay. Again, it's not the most inspiring group, but we felt really good about Thomas Hatch a couple of years ago, right?
We did.
And not just because of his bullpen work in 2020. Prior to that, as a prospect, he was he was great in 2019 as a prospect when he came over to the team. So it's been disappointing to see none of those guys be of any value to the team. And I don't think there's really all that much to project with those guys moving forward as, you know, rotation stalwarts or possibilities even, right?
No.
So with this team in a contention window, you're not going to enter a season with like, oh yeah, Thomas Hatch is going to battle for a rotation spot. Like you just can't feel good about that at this point. So that's been one of the biggest disappointments to me is just they haven't produced some random name outside of that group that has elevated above them. It's just been, you know, Maximo Castillo. I don't buy it all that much. I would love to be wrong. And maybe he's that guy. And his minor league numbers are strong, very, very strong. But yeah, I mean, there's a reason he's basically considered a non-prospect by every prospect site. And he's got very hittable stuff. And yeah, again, happy to be wrong, but he's not somebody who gets me excited. On the other hand, the lower levels of the system, there's some really cool stuff happening down there. And you know, as we watch teams like Tampa and the Dodgers and the Yankees just become these like pitching factories where they're just, you know, they're building pitchers, right? They're taking these moldable guys and like teaching them pitch tunneling and sliders that are nasty. And man, if you look at the slider data on the Yankees, like all of the Yankee pitchers throw the exact same slider and it's just a devastating pitch. And, you know, the Blue Jays opened their Dunedin facility during the pandemic. Their pitching facility didn't even open until like a year after the rest of the facility did. They've hired a lot of like driveline baseball adjacent coaches and guys who are certified in like the biomechanics of pitching and all the stuff of finding these edges. So I'm hoping long-term that the investment in this stuff bears fruit at the major league level, but that stuff's we're early. Like I just said, this pitching lab just opened, some of these coaching hires are still within their first year of the system. The stuff takes time to develop on the under, and you and I have talked about this in a previous podcast about just when you're like developing a system and implementing change and all this stuff, it takes a lot of time. So I'm pretty okay or excited about the future of what the Blue Jays can be as an organization in pitching development, but it's not happening now. And it's pretty disappointing that that's the case. But you have guys like Nick Frasso, Ricky Tiedemann, Dahian Santos, just doing ridiculous stuff at the lower levels, striking out everybody with nasty, nasty stuff. And there's lots like there. We have got another Gabby Martinez in the Florida State League, or I don't think it's called that anymore, but in low A, he's kind of a prospect who wasn't on my radar at all coming into the year, and he's hit amazing this year. He just hit a home run today in his first game back after, I think he like fractured his wrist or something in his hand. He missed like 5 weeks. First game back today, hits a home run. There are some really cool things happening at lower levels, but yeah, I'm not sure the system's in position to bring anybody to the table now. And I don't really think, even looking into next season, that there's any prospects you feel great about other than Gabby Moreno. So yeah, that's a thing the team needs to figure out, get better at developing, and they're on their way. But yeah, I mean, they're going to have to just pay. It's going to be money to supplement the major league talent for this year and next, because there just isn't that pipeline ready to start, you know, guy pitchers to call up that you'd be excited about.
It is. It's unfortunate, because I think that when the Shapiro-Atkins front office came over from Cleveland, we saw that rotation they had there. And it was, you know, all kinds of good arms. It was the bullpen. I mean, some of those guys come through trade, right? Like Andrew Miller is a guy they acquired, not one they developed, but it was a whole bunch of guys they developed internally. And we thought, yeah, like, that's what they're going to do here. And then there was so many names that, you know, guys like Pearson's kind of fallen off because of the injuries, Merriweather, it's the injuries as well. But there's so many other guys like Anthony Kaye, Thomas Hatch. It's kind of just Thomas Pannone, Ryan Barucki, like all kinds of different like pitchers that at one point we thought maybe this guy can be a back of the rotation starter. And then eventually it's like, maybe this guy can be a reliever. And then they haven't even been able to become relievers. And it's just surprising to see. But yeah, like you said, they have a ton of good high upside arm talent, lower minors. They also have a whole bunch of draft picks this year, so it wouldn't be shocking to see them go very pitcher heavy. Yep. That would be positive. But yeah, it is what it is. They're going to have to, if they decide to buy, which I think they will. I don't know if they're going to go all in, but they'll do something at this year's deadline to augment the team. And that's the way it's going to have to be, because there ain't much in Buffalo. But anyways, those are the report cards. So what did you give? You gave the system a C.
C plus, one of those two for the system. The pen bullpen was a C-, starting pitcher C plus, offense B, defense B.
That seems reasonable. What would you give the team all told, like a B-, C plus?
Yeah, I would say, like, coming into the year, you felt like they had a much better roster than the Blue Jays had last year, the first 3 months.
At the start of the year, for
obviously,
sure.
Yeah, it definitely improved once they made some acquisitions, obviously. But yeah, I mean, you were starting the year with Simber and Richards, and you were starting the year with Jimmy Garcia, which was far ahead of the bullpen situation the year before. That's another thing that frustrates me a little bit too. People act like, oh, the team should have seen this coming, that the bullpen was an abject disaster. Again, bullpen, disappointing. It's not striking enough guys out. If you look at Fangraphs, this was the 13th ranked projected bullpen entering the year. They were an average bullpen, and bullpens, unfortunately, are incredibly volatile, and the error bars swing very far on both ways. And unfortunately, they have been far worse than they were projected to be, which is disappointing. If I'm looking at any of those four groups we talked about or we graded, I'm going to say that the bullpen is one of those I'm okay with being the worst of those four, because I know it's volatile entering the year, and I know you can just add arms in July to try and help fix things, right? So again, it's gone poorly, and that's been frustrating. The offense has underachieved last year. You know, just some of the individual performance has been a bummer, and the emergence of Kirk and Cavan really are big reasons why the numbers are, you know, better than it feels. But yeah, I'm probably giving a B- so far, with, you know, still some hope and belief in the team and what they can, you know, pull off, especially with a few deadline adds. And the funny thing about the standings right now, Cam, so we're recording this Wednesday evening. Tampa Bay is currently beating Boston 3-0. So let's just say Tampa Bay wins that game. The Blue Jays will be half a game back of the top wildcard spot and one game back of the third best record in the American League. Like, the sky is not falling on this team, as bad as it feels right now. Cleveland just got swept by the Tigers in a four-game series. Like, that was a team that was playing really good baseball up until like a week and a half ago.
They were
red hot, and they just got swept by Detroit. Seattle is red hot, which, again, poor timing to face them. They are four back of the Jays going into this four-game series.
Oh, no.
Saying that out loud tasted terrible. I'm worried now. The standings are not a disaster at this point for the team. And like I said, they're, you know, possibly soon to be one game back of the third best record in the American League. So you have the Yankees and Astros, and then a lot of flawed baseball teams below them. And the Blue Jays are one of those flawed baseball teams, but still, you know, in that tier, that next tier in the American League. So here's hoping they can, you know, get back to meeting some of our expectations. And there's more reason to be optimistic than it feels like in Blue Jays fan land right now.
I'm going to give them an A+ because it seems like they're doing a game of three-dimensional chess in which they're actively trying to finish sixth in the American League so that they can play the Minnesota Twins in the first round, as opposed to the juggernaut Yankees and Astros. I think this is all a big ruse, and this is all part of the Cleveland Crew's master plan. Anyways, we need to look ahead to that aforementioned series in Seattle that you now have me wildly anxious for. This look ahead is brought to you by PointsBet Canada. If you are a betting type, head over to pointsbetcanada.ca and look at all their lines and info and betting stuff. I'm not a better personally, but I would bet my life savings and everything I own, the shirt on my back and everything, that there is going to be more Blue Jays fans than Mariners fans in Seattle, and Mariners fans are going to get angry about it. You're making the trip down to Seattle this weekend, correct?
Yeah, I'm watching the game with a number of those angry Seattle fans, so I'm looking forward to that. But that could also be a miserable experience if that game doesn't go well on Friday when I'm watching with them, and I'll be there Saturday, Sunday with my family as well. So yes, very much looking forward to this series. I posted some photos on Twitter today about the seats sold, some screenshots of like Ticketmaster seats available for the third base side for the Saturday game. And there's basically nothing available to buy. And if you look at a future Mariners game, nothing but available seats. So you can tell Blue Jays fans have bought like every ticket on the third base side of the stadium. And it's going to be a nuts atmosphere. I'm really excited about it. If you look at the pandemic, obviously 2020, you know, Blue Jays didn't visit Seattle. 2021, they did, but there was still border restrictions in place. You could fly to Seattle, but like all the people who would make the drive normally weren't able to drive across the border. This is the first time since 2019 that we get to go in mass across the border and watch. So it's going to be a really cool atmosphere. The last time it will have been like that was 2019 when the team wasn't good. They weren't good in 2019.
This is the first interesting Seattle series really since 2016. And that was late in the season. I remember that they went to Seattle and won some key games.
And it probably adds to the atmosphere and the fun in the stadium that Seattle is playing good baseball right now, despite that not being a good thing for us. Right. Like they're pitching their mind. Yeah. They're very impressive pitching right now. Julio Rodriguez is a superstar. I would trade Vlad for him in a heartbeat, like right now, like no questions asked. He's possibly the best player in the series, like a true superstar at what, like 20 years old.
You think he's better than Alejandro Kirk?
Well, okay.
Because that's the Blue Jays.
Not go too far. Now. You're right. If you look at the offensive numbers this year, like with Vlad slumping a little bit after a hot June, Alejandro Kirk is like 22 points up.
If the season finished right now, Kirk wouldn't win the MVP. It's going to go to Aaron Judge. But Kirk would finish the highest among Blue Jays in MVP voting, I think.
Oh, yeah. Like very, very easily.
Manoah might too. Manoah might be second.
Yeah, it's a pretty weird, baseball's weird, man. Like it's wild,
right?
It's wild, the year to year volatility and the guys who can emerge. And yeah, it just doesn't happen in some other sports like this. So that makes it fun. It makes it frustrating, but Seattle's going to be a really fun series. And I hope they can win at least two, but it's going to be a tough series. They're playing good ball. Their rotation is just outstanding. Their bullpen isn't as good as last year. But like I said, Julio Rodriguez, superstar mode. Ty France, I think, is coming back from injury, and he's been, like, you know, better than Vlad offensively this year at first base for the Mariners. Like, they've got some good pieces there. Jesse Winker suspended for the whole series because of the Anaheim brawl. So I guess that's one break the Jays catch. But yeah, it'll be fun. Jays need to win some games, right? You start winning some games that maybe you don't expect to win, and steal some. And you know, hopefully they can steal a Casey Lawrence start on Thursday. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, speaking of those starts, I'll just rattle it off quickly. It looks like Lawrence is filling in for Gausman on Thursday. Friday is a question mark. Might be Castillo. Who knows? Manoah would be in line for Saturday. The hope, they mentioned this on the broadcast, and you mentioned this earlier as well, the hope is that Gausman could fill in on Sunday so that Kikuchi doesn't have to pitch. But if Kikuchi does have to pitch, it would be him pitching at Safeco. It's not called Safeco anymore. What is it called now? T-Mobile or something?
T-Mobile Park, yeah.
Whatever park. Seattle Park for the first time as a non-Mariner. So maybe that would... He pitched quite well against them in Toronto, so maybe that would be a good Kikuchi start. Who knows? But regardless, we are hoping for two wins at least. We really don't want to wind up having this be like a 2-5 series out west. That would be very unfortunate. And you're going down for these games, so you want to witness some W's. So you go and enjoy yourself a nice weekend in Seattle, and we will talk later.
Yes, sir.
Thanks for tuning in to Blue Jays Nation Radio, a member of the Nation Network of Podcasts and delivered by DoorDash. Don't forget to like and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts from to never miss an episode.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.